Thank you for tuning in to the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast. My name is Carrie Rabideau, and I'm an Extension Educator with the Center for Youth Development. I'm joined today by Joanna Jemis, also an Extension Educator from the Center for Youth Development. Thank you for joining me today, Joanna.
Thanks for having me.
Now, in a recent blog post, you stated, "I am a community engaged researcher." Now, some might wonder, what does that mean? In this podcast today, you're going to answer that question for us. But first, will you tell us a little bit about your work in this area and then how you came to realize that you are indeed a community engaged researcher?
Absolutely. So my work and my research began as what was a community collaboration with a small youth serving organization with whom University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development and 4-H partnered to build youth programs for young people of Somali heritage. And this partnership came about because as we were speaking with community partners and building those relationships, what these community leaders are telling us is that young people needed support along their pathways to higher education. It was something that they really wanted but were not achieving. And it was important for the parents to find really good support for their children so that they could be among the first to graduate from high school and go on to college in the United States, as many of the parents or all the parents with whom we worked were born and raised in Somalia and in refugee camps thereafter. So it was a really important mission, if you will, that brought us all together. And from that, wanting to build youth programs, we all together wanted to do it intentionally. And being that we are Extension Connecting Research and Community, we wanted to more deeply understand through a really community-engaged empirical process to understand the lives and experiences of the young people. And I'll say, too, I just mentioned that our community partners and the adults and the leaders were the ones telling us these things. And my curiosity as a researcher and as a scholarly practitioner was wanting to understand from the perspectives of the young people, their educational experiences, their aspirations for education. So that is what brought about the need and my own desire to understand this more deeply through research.
So tell us about this research project that this led you to.
Absolutely. So youth programs that we started, I will say, they were STEM programs. And it's the inside joke within the Somali community that all parents want their children to become doctors and engineers. And so STEM was a very appealing program area for which, to do these youth programs. And then project came about, again, with that curiosity of understanding from the perspectives of the young people what they wanted for themselves, what were their aspirations, and what were they doing to achieve it. And I had done a literature review as we were getting ready to do this project and to we received some grant funding to do these youth programs. And a lot of the literature was around the obstacles that youth of Somali heritage face along their educational pathways. And they are plentiful and they are real. And they were also articulated by our community partners, where anti-Muslim racist acts are plentiful for these young people, particularly in Minnesota. And often young people more covertly in their school settings and their education settings are often seen almost by the resources that they lack. Maybe their parents don't know the language, or they're not, they themselves are not cognitively at that level where they need to be education. But there was nothing about what many of these young people from of Somali heritage offered and the assets that they brought forth. So that was really the purpose of the research study, and to bring youth assets and their strengths at the forefront of their educational experience so that we could then design non-formal youth programs that really validated it and used their strengths and gave them opportunities to be their best selves.
So this prompted you to become a community engaged researcher. Mm-hmm. And I know you have 3 points for those of us who are thinking about doing this type of work that would help us be successful. And those 3 points you're going to be walking us through are: first, collaborate with the stakeholders. Mm-hmm. Secondly, learn alongside the community. And then third, ensure reciprocity. Will you start us off with the first one, collaborating with stakeholders? How were you able to develop those authentic relationships?
Absolutely. And I suppose foundational to all of this is the understanding that to do community engaged research, you had to be very intentionally gaining and contributing new knowledge to the field in a scholarly way, but also having a benefit to the community. And doing that together in a collaborative way, which is, in my case, it began with the collaboration of stakeholders. Initially, the stakeholders were the youth serving organization, talking about the need for youth programs and need learning around the topic of STEM and preparing them for higher education. And together with colleagues at the University of Minnesota, we were able to develop the youth programs. I'll say, in that collaboration and that shared commitment, perhaps even to go deeper than collaboration, is what set the stage and the foundation to do this, to essentially transform it into a research project. Not even because the program work still continued, but alongside is to gain new knowledge about what helps these young people thrive. And so that is what was done as far as collaborating with the youth organization. But then it became a collaboration with stakeholders such as youth and family. And that perhaps segues us into the learning alongside the community. It was really important that as I entered the community, especially someone who is not Somali, who represents university, who is white, who does not have the same experiences, that I was trusted and welcomed, and that I was there to learn alongside of them. I still remember one of my earliest days coming into a youth program, and a mother gave me 2 books on Islam. And I was like, "Oh, thank you. This is nice of you." And she said to me, "You know, you're working with us now. You must learn." And we later went on to talk, and I think she expressed to me, she wanted me to essentially not think, she was worried I was going to think bad things about them, to tell others good things about her community. Because in her experience, people that look like me perhaps were not as kind or had different thoughts about their faith and her culture and her community. And that was a moment that stuck with me to say, I need to understand and I need to listen. And so my methodology was really to come and be what's called a participant observer, and really was just to spend time at the youth programs with the families and with the youth and let them share with me over, often with the mothers over drinking tea and having conversations about their children, and with the young people just hanging out with them and doing homework with them, to just be a presence that wasn't going away and not just to go in there to do my interviews and leave.
How long did you go there before you started the interviews?
That's a good question, because it was so blended. So if you want to go from the research standpoint, when I went through the institutional review board for this particular research project, it was probably a few months. But the relationships I had through my work as an extension educator were 2 years pre-existing. Now, some families were new, but many knew me already, which was wonderful because it was not strange that I was showing up to talk to the young people and to learn about their lives. That said, it was still important that I, as far as just ethical research, you state and you gain consent to be a participant in a study. So I would frame it, you know, I know I've been working with you a long time in these youth programs. We'd like to learn a little bit more about your experiences in this program and in your educational, you know, experiences broadly, so that we can, and this is very important as a community engaged research, one, help build more direct experiences that directly benefit you, and also explaining to the young people as much as they may have cared or not cared about, you know, so that other young people who perhaps are like you that live in Ohio or on the other side of the world might have improved educational experiences because of the knowledge that you're helping us gain. So that is something I had to continually say and remind the people of, especially since the way in which I conducted this research, it was not so obvious that I was always conducting research, but I always had to remind them that it was, because good ethics, that this was a study.
Tell us more about that. How did you then record what you saw, what you found, and then share with us maybe some of your most fascinating insights from working alongside the community?
I had about 12 focal young people with whom I worked on this project. And it was designed as such that I met with them for interviews at 3 different points in time for individual interviews. And that was set up so it was at the beginning of their school year or right before, sort of in the middle, and then at the end. And it was longitudinal because we were, one, looking for change if change occurred. Did the way they were working towards their educational goals change? Did the way they're thinking about their education change? And it was also longitudinal in the fact that that time gives you time to build trust and to delve deeper into topics and conversations. For example, when young people were telling me about their educational experiences, there's one young girl who I just asked, were there ever times where things just got in the way of you being able to do well in education? And she started to tell me about this time when she felt very targeted for being Muslim and Somali in her classroom. They're doing an activity where they're addressing stereotypes, and people, the teacher gave them permission to just write down all the stereotypes with each different race or things like that. And people were writing terrorist or, you know, other things around Somali, just saying that as an exercise for their school. And she started telling me about that, and she just broke down and she couldn't talk and she stopped and she's like, I can't do it. And I said, okay. And then like 4 months later, we went back to it and she brought it up to me again and was felt, I think she trusted me. I know she trusted me more to tell me more about her story. And that's one thing that the community leaders told me too. They're like, you know, they might not want to tell another white person about some of the things that white people do. And I knew that. And I think that's really important to understand my positionality in the study as a researcher, that even at the end of it, I knew there are stories that people were still keeping from me. And I was learning to be okay with that. Some of it had to do with some really traumatic experiences, you know, that you're not going to pry on, but that there are other experiences about that they in time told me, or even just, you know, when their mom was bugging them, they didn't want to tell me that right away. And then later I got it. To have those three different points in time to touch base with young people allows for that trust and that relationship to build. And alongside building that relationship, after the first set of interviews, I was at two different sites, I should say. I went to the program every week, once a week. And again, it wasn't super strange for me to be there because they were used to me being there, maybe not as often, but for extension work. And so another form of data collection was, of course, observation and taking notes and engaging and asking them questions. And that also built the trust. And then another form of data collection, which really helped in this community engaged process, was developing non-formal youth like activities for young people to do. And so with the permission of the person leading the club, the club leader, I said, you mind if I, you know, take them through this activity, things that young people have done before in 4-H activities for other youth programs. And then I was able to reflect with them afterwards, as we good youth development practice is. One activity was an identity wheel activity, where I asked young people to think about the most important parts of who they are, what makes them them, and what makes them, that they feel best represents who they are. And then they represented that in almost a pie chart. I wish I could visually show you right now. It was really a really wonderful activity. And then they shared with me their pie charts. So for example, most of the young people had being Somali or Muslim or the combination of both as the biggest part of their identity. Usually it was like 50% of their circle. And I got to say, tell me about why this is so important to you. And I want to think, frame that. Imagine if I, especially with my identity, just said, tell me about what it's like to be Somali and Muslim, or, you know, and that would have been a much different conversation. But they were able to tell me, oh, because it helps me be, this is what makes me a good person. It tells me what's right and wrong. Or as one key finding was, one young woman said to me, I said, tell me why this is so much of being Somali is such a big part of your identity. And she said to me, because I want to be a doctor. And my parents say, when I become a doctor, I can go back to Somalia and help those who are in need from the war. And this became a theme throughout as young people are talking about. So if you remember me mentioning earlier, young people, all Somali parents, ha ha ha, want their kids to be doctors and nurses and engineers. And then this helped me understand why, the cultural underpinnings of that aspiration and its connection to culture. This young person told me that science was her least favorite class, but she was determined she had to be a doctor because it was her way of being Somali. So that tool helped me understand that about their lives. And I know when I started making these youth programs, we're making these STEM programs, which are really wonderful. But now we are able to kind of have a deeper understanding about why STEM mattered in their lives and what that meant.
And I appreciate you giving that insight as to how you became trusted by the community to be able to learn from them. So often I think we picture community engaged research as someone of the community doing the research with the community, right? Where there's trust and the developed relationships. And that's really interesting to hear how you developed those relationships and slowly came into that. I think that might lead us into your third point of ensuring that reciprocity and how you incorporated aspects of this, of your work, into making this a successful research study.
Yeah, that's a good point. And to your point about what is conceived to be, and it is accurate of what community engaged research is, because I think I thought about this a lot, not to go back to like my when should I get my PhD and do research, you know, dilemma I had as leaving undergrad, because you don't want to do research for that ivory tower that people speak about. And so I, for example, I became a community organizer before I went back to the university, so I could be deeply engaged in the community to do the work. Many people then think about community engaged research, as you said, like almost participatory action research, where you do the research in collaboration with the community, which is amazing and wonderful. This was not that. The benefit my presence as a researcher had in the community wasn't necessarily like collectively coming up with solutions to a problem. But in many ways, for example, that the tools I use were non-formal, young people were engaging in non-formal learning. They were thinking critically about their futures and they were making plans through that. My presence as a researcher had benefits, not just in like coming up with data that immediately helped with the community, but just the process itself had a benefit for the young people, whereby young people were thinking critically about their futures. They were having conversations with their parents. As I mentioned in the blog, there was a mother who told me that her mapping activity was on display in their house as a reminder of what she wanted to achieve and how she was going to do it. That was a research tool. That was an instrument. That was a research instrument. And from that map, I was asking her about each juncture in her pathway and what helped her and what didn't help her. And I learned about the supports and barriers along her way, which are critical to my findings. At the same time, she had a plan through that. So that was the intention in this research process, was to have the process itself, yes, the results and the findings, but also the process itself to benefit the young people and to be almost inextricably woven into the fabric of the youth programs, which I was supporting. And I believe we succeeded in doing that. And I'm seeing that now as the young people are now asking me to be references for college applications, and their parents are coming to me for advice on what they should do. So I'm not seen as someone who came to the community just to take knowledge, which I did do in a way that benefited them, but also hopefully the field. Because young, again, as I mentioned earlier, youth of Somali heritage are relatively understudied in the field of education and youth development. There are more now. The earlier studies are a lot about the barriers they face, very importantly. But now there's an opportunity to showcase the assets they carry with them and how they're working towards their educational futures. And of course, how that can sometimes be tempered or rebuffed by the society in which they live, the systems in which they live that don't necessarily value their strengths the way. So I ensured reciprocity in my community engaged research by once continuing to support and strengthening the quality of our youth programs based on what we were learning. It was almost like a continual feedback loop that we'd work together with the community partners to strengthen the program design. There is the reciprocity in that as I was essentially as a researcher gaining knowledge about the young people's lives, they were also thinking critically about their educational futures, as was the purpose of their youth program and what they and their community and the community stakeholders wanted through this partnership. So the blended notion of the blendedness of the research methods and the program objectives were just integrated.
As I'm listening to this and thinking about other youth workers who would like to do more community engaged work, and you are so experienced in this area, how would you suggest somebody begin this work? Where do you start?
With a cup of tea and a community member and a conversation. I say that with a smile, but also genuinely, there is a gift of my role in extension, where that's rare that we have that explicit motion to be both in the community and to be scholars. And so you mentioned how quickly did I start this research project? It depends, right? I mean, so starting in 20, this research project started in 2016, but in 2013, relationships were being formed. And it was not with the intention for research. Not all of it has to be a 10-month study. Not all of it has to be that. But if you are to be in the community, you need to have tea. You had to have coffee. You had to sit. If you're there to do research, but they need someone to tutor their kids or do homework, you don't have to do it all the time, but maybe sit with a young person and help them with their math homework. And a lot of it is just be yourself in the community. And I mentioned the blog is the one time I brought my daughter with me. And that was honestly because I didn't have childcare and I didn't want to not show up when I said I was going to show up, and my babysitter fell through. But in that moment, especially with my role working with mothers and with young people, it shifted. They just saw me as not this person from the university to whom, you know, they were very kind and respectful and welcoming to me But in that moment, there was a connection on a human level that scaffolded everything. I'm not saying you always need to bring your children or show every part of yourself, but you need to be yourself in the community and give of yourself and listen. When you might have research questions, but there are stories to tell that you wouldn't even know to ask. And so to find opportunities to listen is important.
I've really enjoyed listening to your experience and what you just said. You're step-by-step building a relationship. So those relationships aren't just built in a week and then we jump into community engaged research. This is something that you have been authentic and committed to. And I've really enjoyed hearing your stories about it because you've been honest about the challenges and about what has worked well. And that helps all of us learn about this work and how we can think about implementing community engaged research in our area of work.
Thank you for the opportunity to share and reflect on that experience.
I'd like to direct everyone to our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. We've mentioned multiple times Joanna's blog post. It is called The Benefits of Community Engaged Research, and you can find that on our Youth Development Insight blog. Please head on over to that blog post and continue this conversation. Ask the questions you would like to ask Joanna and give her feedback on the work that she has done and continues to do. Also on that website, you can find information about training, education, and tools for all professionals who work with youth. And I'd also like to encourage you to check out the information on our Minnesota 4-H program. Thank you again for joining me, Joanna. This is Carrie Robidoux from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.